Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees. That's right, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And, wow, sitting on the couch there, giggling away.
That's me. I'm Casey.
Casey Clark.
Sorry, I was laughing. I don't know if the audience will hear this, but you essentially repeated yourself twice as if you were like saying, hi, my, name is, just as you're doing that. And I thought that was, I was just giggling about it.
Well, I think I will have edited it out, but
yeah.
I got a text during one of those lines and I didn't want that in the recording.
I see. Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense.
I'm ever the professional,
you see. Yes. Thank you, Alex. There has not been a single mistake on this entire podcast, at least done by you. Mine, it's chock full. Yeah. It's like, there's so many holes in this that we wouldn't hold any water.
Out of our 30%. You're like, I would say 29.99.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
And
yeah,
I am almost faultless.
I think so. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't blame the audience member. Yeah, I'm explaining it to you. It's the whole basis of our podcast.
Well, I just want to clear something up. The joke is that it's quite the opposite.
Wow.
I am the buffoon of the piece. Casey is the Greek hero.
So, wait, does that make me Hercules and you are Danny DeVito's character?
Yes. But also, I mean, Danny DeVito's character was, you know...
He trained Hercules.
Yeah, yeah. So, he ain't no slub.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a hero in his own right, Casey. He is out.
Now, that's what I'm talking about. Little centaurs. Yeah, they are.
He's not a centaur, Casey.
Minotaur?
Nope.
What?
He is a... He is a...
Danny DeVito is a fuck.
A fuck. You tell him I said that.
You get him on. We're going to get him on this podcast. We're going to talk to him about it.
He's a man, upper body, goat, yeah. Bottom body.
And that's a different thing?
What the hell is that? Like a fawn or a satyr. Satyr. He's a satyr.
The opposite of the fawn. Oh.
Yes, he's a satyr.
Okay, all right.
Wow, how did we even get here?
Well, honestly, you called me a Greek god and I had to, we had to talk about it for a second.
Certainly got the figure of one.
Wow, thanks, Alex. that's not true, everyone. I actually look more like a spider monkey. So you know.
Anyway, Casey, hello.
Good day, Alex.
We have some kind of fun news that we can't really tell anyone, but we can tease it.
Yeah.
We have this nifty thing called the Cone Club.
Oh, is that a part of the Tremium, arbitrary Tremium?
It is, completely arbitrary Tremium. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com, where you can support this podcast monetarily, and you can receive in return bonus audio episodes, bonus video episodes, live streams, and the Cone Club, where you get monthly stickers of cones.
Yeah.
Each month, a different species of cone illustrated by a different artist. We've had a couple repeat artists of, some people that we love their art and wanted to bring them back.
You could say we couldn't get enough of them.
That's right. Casey, for the first time ever,
what?
It is possible that we will not be sending out a cone this month.
What? What? Oh my gosh, next our subscribers month. Are immediately leaving. I can hear it right now. Oh gosh.
You will be receiving a sticker in the mail.
What? This doesn't make any sense. If it's not a cone, Alex, what could it possibly be?
What could it possibly be?
No. It's going to be something that's not a cone? A different tree part?
It possibly could be.
Oh my God. Does this have anything to do with the poll that we took that one time from our listeners that some said, yes, that would be fun?
Yes. And do you remember the results of that poll?
I do.
Okay.
Huh.
Yes.
And it was a non-cone tree part.
A non-cone tree part, an NCTP.
I see. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
A classic.
A non-fungible non-tree part.
Yes. Non-fungible tree part.
Interesting. So is this like a leaf or a flower or a fruit of some kind?
Well, it certainly could be, Casey.
Oh, man. Why did I give you the power to choose artists
and
what they draw?
This is called growth.
Oh my God.
And I mean that quite literally.
I hate growth. Oh, is that another tree clue?
Yes, it could be.
Wow.
Yes.
Well.
So keep your eyes open before the end of the month.
This is exciting.
It's possible, we're banking these episodes a little bit. It's possible that we've already revealed it and this
is
all for naught.
Yeah. So if that happens, then everyone just act surprised. Okay.
Yeah.
Please.
Please make us feel good.
Yeah. Well, otherwise we're just going to not get on the internet until May so that we miss everything that we might have done out of order.
Yes.
Yeah. So just letting you know.
Well, that's right. If you want to support this podcast, and Casey, did you know that this podcast is run completely on the support of our listeners?
Right, we are listener supported.
Except for a few ads here and there. But if you love this podcast, if you get to the end of your month, Casey, I'm talking to you specifically.
I see, I'm listening.
And you think, gosh, Alex is so funny and cool.
Casey's interesting, he's kind of curious. I think his voice is kind of nice.
But if you get to the end of your month and think, gosh, completely arbitrary, it's a free podcast that I get every single week, and I've learned a lot, I've laughed a little, maybe, and I've passed information on to my friends, and I'm the hit at every party, consider supporting the podcast at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com. There are a couple different options there for support. You can do annual support. So you just pay once, set it and forget it, like that chicken rotisserie thing from the early 2000s.
Exactly.
You can pay monthly if you want. You can send a gifted subscription to someone. And both tiers come with a bunch of goodies. And we love doing it so much.
It's exactly right. It's a lot of fun. And you know what? Everything we do here, literally, it's all based on that. So we wouldn't be doing it without you. So thank you, guys. And for all of you who showed up, you're just the best.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Casey, today we are talking about a very interesting tree.
Yes, we are. And a very interesting thing that I've been trying to figure out how to talk about and a good tree to talk about.
Wow.
For a long time.
How exciting.
Because it's going to be a callback, Alex, to an episode we did many years ago.
Wow.
Now. And it's literally what we were talking about. And we're like, but that's not how it works. And now I am coming back to you saying, wow, well, that actually might kind of be how it works.
How exciting.
Yeah. It's very exciting. Today, we're talking about the snow gum.
Yes.
Which is an Australian tree. So those of you down in Australia, Tasmania, you'll know it.
Ah.
However, if you live in a cold, temperate part of the world and you walk around and you say, wow, would you look at that? There's a eucalyptus growing here in, I'm sorry, Norway? This is that tree.
Amazing.
Yes, it is the most cold hardy eucalyptus. It is Eucalyptus passiflora.
I love it.
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. It's going to be, I hope, one of the most fascinating discussions we've ever had.
Holy shit.
And ideally, you'll take it from here, you'll go to our website, and then you'll click on all the links and listen to all this other stuff and read these other articles. It really is one of those things that I'm just like, oh my God.
And you'll see just how far the koala hole goes.
Exactly.
And we will get started right after the break. We'll be right back with the snow gum here on Completely Arbitrary. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man, I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
Well, the time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6 or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh yeah, what did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for Completely Arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees. and use code TREES for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking... Today I switched my D's and T's.
Nice.
Today we're talking snow gum. Casey, as I told you before we started...
Today.
Before we started recording, I said, you know, there's no gum like snow gum.
You did, and I thought that was quite clever.
Thank you.
Honestly.
So Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I... walking.
All right. Okay.
As Wilco said,
I'm walking
through Australia. And we come across some.
I love that song, Alex. That's such a good song.
I do too. It's amazing. And we come across some snow gum. Let's ID this tree.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Alex. If you are to identify this tree, and you say, wow, it's called the snow gum, where is it growing? And I respond to you, well, it grows in the snowy mountains. Ideally, hope you would say, God, that just makes good sense. This is an Australian tree. It's a eucalyptus, Eucalyptus passiflora, which, if you don't remember, the name eucalyptus means well hidden or well veiled, well covered.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, it's in reference to the flowers of the eucalyptus. In fact, I think it's the entire genus, and it might be the family as well, but I think it's mostly the genus that does this 100% as like a defining characteristic.
Huh.
Essentially, just to skip straight to the flowers.
Let's do it.
Let's just go for it.
Hell yeah.
They have fused together their sepals and their petals. So you remember the sepals are those very outer layers, kind of like the, they would be the nondescript, usually green outer coverings on the bud. And then they open up and they are the things that are at the very bottom of the flower.
Okay. I can imagine like a rose.
Yes.
And the rose is kind of like sitting in a little like shoop, like a little green gravy dish.
Yeah. Okay,
and that's the sepal.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And there's always going to be a similar number. So there on roses, there will be five sepals and there will be five petals.
Okay.
In this case, there are no distinctions between them and there's no petals at all because both of those things have fused together to create essentially two cones. In our case, in eucalyptus, they kind of are different sizes. Some are very long cones, but they're essentially take two cones, like an ice cream cone, and flip one upside down on top of the other.
You got to be careful, Casey.
Yes, you're right.
Talking about the geometric shape.
Precisely.
You don't know how confused I was.
I get it, and I regret the error. I'm sorry.
Did you see me get red?
I did. When I was panicked, I was like, Alex, what's the problem? It's just talking about cones, bro.
Rocking my world.
Yes, you're right. Good point. This is the geometric shape of a cone.
Got it.
So essentially, some have fused to be kind of a rounded top. Others are literally two cones that look like they're on top of each other.
Okay.
But what happens, the reason that eucalyptus is called a well-hidden flower... or well hidden is the name, eucalyptus, eucalyptus, is that the sepals and everything have fused around the inner sexual parts of the stamen and the pistils of the flower.
Wow.
And then the top bit of it pops off. So it almost is now as if those two cones that I was imagining, the geometric shaped cones, if one just kind of goes pop, and pops off, then the flower, in quotes, that you see of any eucalyptus tree is actually all of the stamen.
Wow.
Popping up, looking like these big, beautiful colors, and they look a lot like the flowers of the acacia or vichelia. You know those like big poofs?
Yes.
This is they look exactly like that, except they're more hemispherical. They look like just a hemisphere rather than a full globe like what you'd expect for vichelia.
I'm thinking a little bit of, what are those little flowers that you find in like, you know, at your high school field?
Like daisies?
You blow, and the little seeds come off.
Yeah, those are the seed heads of dandelions.
Dandelions.
Yes, it's not quite like that.
Okay.
It is more just a long white string that comes out, and then on the tip there's a little bit of pollen, because that's the stamen.
How fascinating.
But there's like maybe 50 or 60. There's a whole bunch.
Okay.
So that is what it is. And this is one that has kind of a shield-like top. So instead of having a cone with another cone on top, this looks like it kind of the flower comes out with a cone on the bottom, and the cone just has like this rounded shield-like top. So if you look it up, and you just you can look up kind of a Google image of the flowers of the snow gum, which is Eucalyptus passiflora. Then you'll see like these really beautiful red kind of rounded top capsule things. And then as the flowers expand, then those capsules just kind of go pop and they pop off. And then all these big white stamens pop out and you have this gorgeous, beautiful flower.
They are beautiful.
Isn't it something?
I actually think the unbloomed flowers are more beautiful than the bloomed flowers.
Yeah, they're both attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, they usually have about 7 to 15 individual flowers on a little tight, kind of white puff looking raceme. And it grows up and all of these come out. And so they look like these little puffy snowballs just kind of popping out there. But it's a puffy snowball made of a puffy snowball, which I think is just fun.
It's puffy snowballs all the way down.
It sure is.
Now, can I just say, like, looking at this flower,
yeah,
I'm like, people are allergic to that.
Oh, you think so?
I get a vibe of that it makes people sneeze. If there are any Australians who can disprove or prove my point, please reach out to me.
Yes,
my phone number is not.
Oh, Alex. My God, sorry, I had to mute his microphone there for a second.
I was getting too close to the truth.
Well, that is, that. I think you might be onto something. I don't honestly 100% know. This is a tree that we have here in Portland. I have seen it. I have looked at it.
Wow.
But I have never gone and like given it a sniff, you know?
Okay.
Like, I don't know. And also, I'm really not that allergic to this kind of thing.
Yeah, for all of my ailments, I've never had like allergies to things.
That is like, I feel it's a superpower these days.
Yeah.
Like, remember how we've done a couple of talks where people have talked about how the amount of pollen and allergies like shot up or something?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, Casey, I would love to talk about one of my favorite parts of any eucalyptus, the bark.
Yes. And this one has not disappointed, Alex.
It is a stunner.
Did you give it a look? Are you looking at it?
Oh, I sure did.
Yeah. So it's a smooth, creamy white to gray. Oof. With like this tan. It exfoliates in these beautiful, like kind of strips, but also rounded patches, which gives it like a camouflage look, but it's also a little stringy.
You know those videos of people who will dye certain objects?
Uh-huh.
For some reason, I'm thinking like football helmet.
Okay.
They'll like dye a football helmet and they'll put a bunch of different, I don't know if they're paints or lacquers or something, into like a thing of water. They'll swirl it around and then they'll dunk the football helmet in a very specific way, bring it out, and there's like a crazy pattern all over it.
Yeah, I kind of know what you're talking about.
Okay, like oil dyeing pattern.
Exactly. I know exactly the technique. I don't know anything about it, but I can imagine, and I know what you're talking about.
I clearly don't either.
Hey.
But that is what this reminds me of. It's like super like psychedelic and gorgeous and looks very like intentional in a way.
Yeah, and it's just the way it grows, like they're just another beautiful thing. Like
gorgeous.
This is, it's just one of those things about eucalyptus that I think is, I agree with you, but there are obviously many different sorts of eucalyptus. Some are stringy, some are really rough and hard, and then some look like this.
Okay.
And they're just, this is one of those that is just a stunner when you look at it.
What is the adjective, you know, like we talk about like these keyword, like it's peltate or it's that, like what is the adjective for this kind of bark?
You know, I think it would be exfoliating.
Exfoliating.
Yeah,
okay.
So it'd be smooth bark that exfoliates in either strips or these small patches.
Okay.
I think that would be the best, most like succinct way to describe
it. Yeah, it's like a category, I guess.
Yeah, so. There's not really, it's kind of the thing with bark, and like bark and tree form, they're words that usually are well understood, and someone says, when they say it, it means pretty clearly what it means.
Yeah.
But with bark, Alex, there's not really any like technical terms, you know? So like a leaf shape, acuminate and obtuse and obovate, like they all have specific meanings.
Less of that with bark?
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of a description. Whatever descriptions work, but there are some that just fit perfectly, you know, flaky versus scaly.
Right. That's why we have like these simple words end in Y, like stringy bark.
Exactly.
It is stringy bark.
It just makes sense. You just got to give it what it is. Say it as you see it.
Love it. Well, Casey, speaking of leaves, let's talk about the leaves. Are they eucalyptus?
They sure are.
Okay.
They are the leaves that you know of.
Yeah.
So I you may not recall, I think the last time we did a eucalyptus, it was the kauri, I think.
I recall.
Yeah. Well, do you remember the thing about young versus old eucalyptus leaves, or rather the juvenile versus adult leaves?
Wow. Let me try to think here.
Okay.
The juvenile versus adult eucalyptus leaves.
Yeah.
Are they different colors?
Not different colors most of the time. Usually they're about the same color.
Are they different shapes?
They are.
So the young ones are more round.
Correct.
And the older they get, they become lanceolate.
Yes. Now, it's not the leaves themselves. It's the stems and the trees they're growing on.
Sure. That was a faux pas. So it's not like the same leaf will go from round to lanceolate.
Correct.
It's in that leaf's lifetime.
Exactly.
It is... The older the tree, the leaves start to change.
Precisely.
Okay.
And the other thing they do is they grow opposite, and often they actually encircle the stem.
How about that?
So it's wildly different from what they look like as adults, up to the point where you'd think they are just completely different trees.
Yeah, okay.
So these round, circular leaves that are oppositely arranged, and then as they get older, they become alternately arranged, and they are falcate, so they kind of curve down and look almost like a scythe or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then they are long, very skinny. They only get to about 3 inches long, about 8 centimeters, 1 to 2 centimeters wide. They're not very thick, very lanceolate leaves, but they themselves, like if you measure the thickness of the leaf blade itself, so their width is not very big, but the thickness of the actual blade, it's robust. Like you can feel it and you're like, okay, there's something there.
There's some like liquid in there, like an aloe almost?
Not quite like that. It just kind of has some substantial, just has a little heft to it.
Okay.
So it's more than like a maple leaf. If you clip your, or if you pinch your fingers around the blade of like a maple, a Norway maple.
Your fingers are going straight through.
Yeah. You're like, well, I can't really feel that there's a whole lot there. Like texturally, I'm not touching my finger, but there's not like your body does not tell there's substantially something there.
Sure.
It's like, am I describing
what
this well
enough?
What a
funny way. Yeah, it is. I understand.
I was imagining me like describing in such detail the fact that you can't feel something. Like, just say you can't feel it, dude. No, but don't you get it?
Wow. That's a Caseyism, if you ask me.
It totally is. Now I'm getting better at being like, Casey, you're explaining something that doesn't need explanation.
That's fair.
This is what happens when I'm writing my tree book and I'm writing things out. I'm like, Casey, it's quite obvious.
It's brown.
Yeah.
Just call it brown.
Just call it brown. It's a little bit of off black with a little white, green, and orange. But like, imagine all the colors together except for like a few.
Well, Casey, you said these leaves were falcate.
Yes.
I like to think that etymologically that comes from a falcon's talon.
Ooh.
Is that at all anything?
I don't know. I would love to learn that though. That would be great.
We can make that canon if you want.
Yeah, we might as well. It's all right. They're falcon-like leaves.
It's done.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about them is that they are very shiny. They're
the
kind
leaves.
Of a blue-green color, but they're very shiny. Apparently, one of the resources I read, they essentially said you can see it from far away because it's so shiny.
Oh, wow.
It's got a lot of oil glands in it. And so it very much like you look at it and it's like, oh, there's kind of a glossy looking thing over there.
Oil gland. Okay. So that's like, does it change colors in the light or anything?
I don't think
that?
So. I think it's just shiny, you know, like there are some leaves that are more glossy and some that are dull.
Okay.
This is on the glossy side of that spectrum.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So it's a very beautiful leaf. And these trees also, I should note, they grow to like 100 feet.
Wow.
But guess what? When I was reading all these descriptions, they're like, yeah, it's kind of a small to medium tree, grows to about 30 meters.
Nah.
I was like, wait, what? I just need to make sure I'm doing my calculations here.
Hey, in the land of the cowrie.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little tree.
It reminds me of our trees here. Riven's like, yeah, it's like a medium tree, grows to like 120 feet. I don't know. It's pretty pathetic. We're like, wait, what?
Next to the 300-foot Douglas fir.
Yeah, exactly.
Casey, why do they call this a snow gum?
Well, I actually believe there's two different reasons for it. One is that the flowers are so white, it looks like it's covered in snow.
Sure.
Now, that, I think, could be a fair reason. I think that's probably what people in the nursery trade would probably say. I, though, believe that the main reason has more to do with what we're talking about today.
Wow.
Because this is a tree that grows at the highest elevations. It is the most cold hardy of all eucalypt trees, according to my research.
Oh, wow.
So what that means is that it grows above about 2,300 feet in the snowy mountains, essentially in the south of Australia. The southeast grows from the tablelands in New South Wales through Victoria into Tasmania. So it's a nice range. But it also grows all the way down to sea level, and it grows from these really wet conditions that get snow half the time to these very dry, mesic, or very droughty conditions in different lower, hotter areas.
This is a diverse tree.
It is. And that, my friend, is kind of germane to what we're talking about here, where it's a tree that has essentially the ability to grow all through many different environments.
In Australia, it's germane.
I'm sorry, guys. I
know that germane is from New Zealand.
Yes.
But come on.
It's a fun language thing, though, right? And that's what we're about. Germane. I have to say, as you said that, my brain was thinking through that. And I'm like, wait a second. He's from this. Is that? I'm pretty sure that's who he's talking about. So if that was talking about that, is that correct? Is that gonna be good? Is someone going to catch us? And then you you brought it back full circle.
So yeah, it has layers there.
It really does. Yeah. So this is a tree that has a lot of different ways of living. And usually when we're talking about something like evolution, a tree that develops this wide breadth of ability to live and grow in certain places, they usually just are very full of genetic variation.
Wow.
So this is another tree I learned about actually on Thursday. It's going to be coming down the pike. So those of you in California, we're going to talk about the coast live oak. I'm so excited about this.
Oh, fun. We haven't covered the coast live oak?
No, we've covered the southern live oak.
Okay, yes.
This is the same tree for all intents and purposes, but it grows in California. So you remember evolution, right? You know, we talked about this a few times.
I'm gently familiar.
Yeah. So this,
can I give a recap?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Quickly.
All right. Evolution is the process by which things evolve. Okay. I'm using the thing to.
Can we ask our fact checkers? Is that right? Yeah. It looks like Alex. Yeah, that's right. That's it.
Survival of the fittest. The members of a species that survive will pass those surviving traits onto their young.
Yes.
And so over time, over a very long time, that species will change.
Yes.
To survive better.
Like the ones that were a little less successful will make fewer babies.
Uh-huh.
And then over time, the ones that are more successful will make more babies. So you see this large shift.
So,
right?
Overall, species are getting stronger and fitter. And
yeah.
Better.
Towards whatever environment they're living in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
This is all based around the environment and these environmental stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a tree that has this big variation, then you end up finding that it can grow in a lot of different places and then respond to a pretty huge amount of changes. So if it gets really dry up where the trees are growing, where it's wet, up at higher elevations, more snow, more rain, you would expect as it dries out, those trees will probably just keep adapting and be like, yeah, actually, I'm okay.
Mm.
I can adapt to this. And you'll see this kind of, theoretically, just this tree will adapt to the new changes in the environment.
Sure.
Evolution works such that when you have your genes, they are set. And this was the big thing we talked about in our old episode about the umbrella thorn and the giraffes.
Oh, yes.
So this was the Darwinian idea versus the Lamarckian idea.
Okay.
So Lamarck would say, well, that giraffe needs to get to the higher leaves, so it's going to stretch its neck, and then it's going to develop a little bit longer neck during its lifetime because it's actively stretching it, you know? The same as if you are working really hard on playing guitar. So your fingers that play guitar are really toned. They know exactly what they're doing. They're very strong. You could crack a walnut if you chose. Then you pass that on to your next generation,
yes.
Your offspring will then inherit those really strong fingers. That those giraffes inherit those really longer necks.
So that's what Lamarck thought.
Correct. And then Darwin said, no, no, no. And then later we kind of said, no, that's not exactly how this works. It's actually your genes, and you would have a variation that gave you a slightly longer neck than me.
Yes.
My generation, or my my kin that I create, my offspring, they would slowly but surely be outcompeted over many generations, like you said, by your offspring that have a little bit longer necks.
And ultimately, so, that little bit longer neck that I have and my offspring now have is a mutation?
Yeah, more or less. Okay. Or it could be a variation. You know, you and me, us humans, we have general neck lengths between X and Y. You know, that's our range. If it's a little more closer to X, it's a little longer. If it's closer to Y, it's a little shorter.
Okay.
And then overall, that average just moves up because your offspring are a little bit better. Mine are a little bit worse. So mine start to die out, and then yours kind of just breeds more. So now there's more that have this longer X-sized neck.
Okay.
So it's this slow shifting average, which a lot of people think it's more like everything comes from you, you know? You had the longer neck, now all of your offspring have long necks, then the longest of your offspring now makes all the rest of that offspring, and it becomes this kind of like one-to-one, like
right.
From you to the next one to the next one. It's not how it
not
works.
Not how it works.
No, it's this big average over this entire population. So over time, the average neck size starts to increase because the longer necks are just generally more successful in this one particular environment. So, Alex, we know this, right? We are very familiar with the idea that this is how evolution works. So evolutionary biologists have always known you cannot, and this is kind of the big crux, you cannot change your genes after they're already set. You are born with what you have, and you pass it on or you don't.
Right.
There's variation within those genes, or there's mutations that really give you some crazy thing.
Okay.
So the mutations and this variation is essentially how we always thought everything always worked. You know, it would always keep going forward. But what we noted very explicitly is the Darwinian idea is different from the Lamarckian. Lamarckian is wrong. You cannot pass something that you learn or develop in your lifetime on to your kin.
Right.
So whatever
this isn't a video
you,
game.
No, it's not.
Where you get really good at blacksmithing, so your next of kin will have high blacksmithing skill.
This is exactly what they talked about in one of the Radiolab episodes that I listened to kind of get a little bit of background, which is exactly what I wanted to do. Like, I heard about this and I was like, oh my God, I got to cover that.
Right.
And then I finally found a study that talked about this tree. It happened to be that this is a tree that's also going to be in my tree identification book. Mm. So I was like, oh, this is going to work out great. I'm going to do a little research, and then I'm going to talk about this tree and this study and this other thing that has been on our list of things to talk about for years now.
But really quick, is the implication like, people say like, oh, you're such a talented musician.
Yeah.
I bet your children will be really talented musicians, you know, or where do you get that from? You get it from your grandmother?
Yeah.
You know, that's bullshit.
That was the accepted answer. Yes.
Yeah.
It's all what you learn right then. So your kids will have the same abilities that you have. Let's just assume that you're going to have I don't even know. Like, let's just say a clone. Like, we just make a clone of Alex. That clone of Alex, based on all these other environmental factors that little Alex will experience, will change everything about it.
Yeah.
So if your clone Alex just has this wild fascination with cars, because when he was just this teeny tiny little thing, he was exposed to how an engine worked and was just like, oh my God.
Ain't no clone of mine.
Yeah. I could just see that. You just like, ooh, nope, something went wrong. This cannot be my clone.
I always say that I fear my children getting either being really good athletes or really into cars.
Yeah,
I have nothing to contribute.
Yeah, and you also are like, I have no interest in going to your shows or your games. So just, you know.
Or your car shows.
Yeah. So yes, Alex, that's essentially, it's all hogwash. Whatever you experience in your life, that is what will lead you to being good or bad or whatever it is.
Sure.
That is going to be the big thing that affects you becoming whatever you are.
Casey, I have to ask the ultimate question here.
Yes.
What does this have to do with the snow gum?
I'm really happy you asked.
Thank you.
So.
You're welcome.
There is a study that came out, and I will have to admit, the snow gum is a kind of small bit of a larger kind of new radical, heretical idea about how genes work.
Heretical.
And this is having a lot to do with climate change and having a lot to do with this tree in particular, and this is why they studied it, because A, it's very common. You can get it just about anywhere, and it has a huge amount of plasticity in its phenotype.
Wow.
Do you remember back in biology in high school, phenotype versus genotype?
Oh, God, no, Casey.
Oh, okay. You, as soon as I say it, you'll be like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Okay.
Genotype is your genes. It's what your genes are. It's the nature side of that equation.
Phenotype is your fiends.
It is your fiends. It is what you look like and what you fiend for.
Sure.
Yes. So, you know, yeah, I am a Smarties phenotype. I always want fiend, or I always want Smarties.
You fiend for Smarties, bro.
Exactly. No, Alex, unfortunately, a phenotype is whatever is actually displayed.
So you
remember that variation I was telling you about?
Yes.
That's kind of the phenotype.
Okay.
Where different genes will say, do this. And then what that actually shows up as, what you can see and measure and observe, is always just slightly different. So your phenotypes are just a slightly bit different. It's like your face versus my face versus every other human's face in the entire world. The genes, for all intents and purposes, say the same thing. Make a nose, make eyes, make eyebrows, cheek, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
But the phenotype is all those little differences in how they're actually observed.
Okay.
So
the genotype is the little man, the little huckster sitting behind the curtain, pulling the levers, sweating. And the phenotype is that big green face, that big intimidating face of the Wizard
Beautiful.
Of Oz.
Beautiful, Alex.
Yeah.
This is why we have you here.
Oh, okay.
Well, so it turns out that this is, there's not just one gene O-type. There's not just one genetics that everything comes from. There's actually what they call the, it's kind of this next almost, I don't know, it's like a meta level of genes that's called the epigenetics, the epigenes.
It's the genes of genes?
Not even that. It's more like all the other stuff that interacts with and around the genes, the chemicals and proteins and molecular reactions. It's all this other stuff that interacts with the genes that then contribute to what happens out in the world, out in actual physicality.
Interesting.
So for our tree, for instance, there is a, again, this is all measured more or less on averages.
Okay.
Our tree has certain lengths of leaves, let's say, depending on where it's growing. Really mesic sites, which are kind of like medium good, medium bad, and then really dry sites. So their leaves are different lengths. So what this study did is they basically measured a bunch of things and then tried to figure out if there is a difference in how a plant is experiencing the world around it and how its offspring shows up with its phenotypes.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what this other stuff is talking about. And it made me go down this rabbit hole looking up a Radiolab episode that I heard a while back about this small village in, I think, Sweden. And this little village had these people that were living and dying, doing all these things, and they were keeping track, like this, the church, whoever was over there doing these things, they were keeping track of everyone who died, when they died, what they died of. And they also kept track of how much food was produced, and if there was a famine, or if the crops failed, or whatever happened, or if it was a glut year, and there was just all sorts of stuff.
Okay. So who died and how?
Yeah.
And the food conditions.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so what they did is they found out that this little village was keeping track of everything like so well and so perfect over like hundreds of years that there's this natural experimental data waiting to be looked at.
Wow.
And there's an article that's on here that you can go and read. You can also go listen to this Radiolab episode and get it way better than we can do. Obviously, they're way better than we are at podcasting. I'm okay admitting that.
That doesn't need to be said.
Sorry, take that away.
Clearly.
So you can go listen to this.
You know, I hate to say this. I think Michael Jordan might be a better basketball player than me.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to be said, but, you know, we're just going to put it out there so everyone knows that we see this. So they talked to this guy who did this research, and he found out if you are a child, doesn't matter if you're a boy or girl, in between the ages 9 and 12, if you experience a famine, one of those years during that time, that your grandchildren will have a reduced likelihood of dying at a younger age, like by 30 years.
A reduced likelihood.
You will live upwards of 30 years longer if your grandparent experienced a bit of a famine when they were between the ages of 9 and 12.
What?
If your grandparent experienced a famine between the ages of 9 and 12, you would have something like a 400% reduction in your likelihood of getting heart disease or diabetes.
Oh my God.
You would essentially be wildly healthier if your grandparents suffered when they were a small, explicitly prepubescent child.
Okay.
And the most they can figure out is they looked at boys in the Radiolab episode. Uh-huh. And in other stuff, they note that this goes the same way for boys or girls in this time. And essentially, they have found that your sperm as a little boy is not really done. It's not ready before you're prepubescent.
Okay.
So what they do is when you are this prepubescent little child, that your body is taking all these cells and kind of setting it aside and saying, you will become the sex cells. You are going to be the gametes, the sperm that is going to be used later down the line.
Okay.
So this is just all the cells kind of get pushed over there, put in this little pile. Puberty happens. Then all the same things. You become this mature sexual being. You have a child.
Using the cells in that stockpile.
Exactly. That were created before when you are having this like intense famine kind of experience.
Whoa.
Exactly.
Oh, they're like hardier?
They are literally like, that's essentially what it is.
Wow.
And no one can say for sure what exactly is happening. But there's also studies that have shown just the feeling of being hungry is associated with a longer life. Like not even food. Like if you get the scent or you feel like you've eaten or you get something, it'll go away. Like it doesn't even mean that you are or are not eating. It's literally that feeling of hunger. I had a little bit of breakfast this morning, had a bit of a snafu, and I had to drive down to my mom's house. Came back and I was like, Alex, let's just get this done. I haven't eaten. I am actively hungry right now.
Yes.
That feeling, whether or not I actually am hungry, is associated with a longer life.
You're going to live longer than me because you are hungry right now?
Actually, you and I will only live potentially longer, statistically speaking, if our grandparents did not eat food like we do today between the ages of 9 and 12.
Well, I got news for you, pal. My grandparents were poor farmers.
Mine were too. Oh, so I'm just like, yeah.
So you know what? I'm happy for you.
The race is on, old chap.
I'm gonna have you assassinated just to prove my point.
No.
That is wild.
Yes. So you're asking yourself, okay.
Right.
We're talking about a tree. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about grandparents having sex. What exactly? How does this all come together?
Prepubescent boys' sperm.
Hey, this is trees and other related topics, baby. This is where we're going today.
Don't give us a green light. We'll scream right through that thing.
It's going to be beautiful. So it turns out that this is all a part of this larger study called epigenetics.
Epigenetics, okay.
And epigenetics really is all those other interactions. And Radiolab did another thing talking about this with rat and maternalness, maternal care in rats. And essentially, the idea is, and this goes back to Lamarck, of course.
I was going to say, this sounds like Lamarck's theory.
Exactly. So
it's kind of a redeeming moment.
It is. And it also has a lot to do with like the institutional and generational trauma of everything. Like this is kind of one of those kind of studies and those things that you're just like, oh my God. That's what Carrie brought this up yesterday. And I was like, actually, that is a great metaphor to describe this. And then you add in all of the other socioeconomic things that can like have an effect of, you know, how a person lives, which makes it very hard for us to say, let's transition this to people real fast. Mm. You have to be very diligent and careful because of the socioeconomic factors and racism, like actual prejudice that also does certain things.
Totally.
But this is like a scientific study that essentially is saying, if you are a tree, you are this beautiful, lovely snow gum growing up in a droughty area, you are actually creating offspring that are more drought resistant. Essentially, the plant experiences a stress, a drought stress, and it says, aha, I'm experiencing a drought, and it remembers. Not only does it remember, but it says, okay, it's happening again. I know what to do. And it responds better and it is more resistant and resilient to this stressor, this drought stressor, because it experienced it before.
When you say remember,
yes.
What do you mean literally?
I don't know.
Okay, that's
nobody
fine.
Knows.
Okay.
The most they can say is, oh, well, there's some molecular things in the DNA and it all switches around and now this tree responds better.
It's almost like short-term evolution.
Yeah. It's called a somatic memory, which is essentially you have certain chemicals built up and then those chemicals are built up in response to the stimulus A.
Like psychosomatic, that's where that comes from?
I'm not sure. In this case, I don't know.
Which is like it's psychosomatic. Somatic is like something mental that makes you feel something physical.
Oh,
right?
And then maybe you get triggered and then you feel that again.
Yeah.
But it's just your brain remembering it.
Right.
I'm sure that this has something to do with it. But I honestly, we're already at the extent of my knowledge. So
I mean, we're way past the extent of my knowledge.
We're doing great, everyone. Strap yourselves in. It is essentially, it's probably related because I believe the definition I learned of the somatic is essentially like these molecular reactions that are they happen in response to some stressor or some stimuli and then they kind of stay there, and then if that stimuli doesn't happen again then they kind of go away, and then if that stimulus happens again then they get built back up. But if that stimulus, let's say it's a drought, happens more frequently, then that the chemicals, those molecules, are gonna be there still, and then when that stressor comes back, the chemicals are already there, so the tree's already prepared.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, oh, I still have my guard up. I'm still ready to go, and it's better. So resistance and resilience essentially mean how good are you to resist something, so just keep the status quo without going back. And resilience is how quickly can you bounce back from something that you get knocked down from.
Right. So, say that one more time.
So resistance, we have to remember, is the ability for something to withstand some stressor. Mm-hmm. Like basically hold back the tide that's pushing you.
That's resistance.
Resistance. Resilience is how quickly you can bounce back
from
that thing. Yeah, okay. So you do get knocked down or you get knocked back a little bit. Mm-hmm. How quickly can you get back up to your full normal capacity?
If you play video games, we're talking armor versus health regen.
Exactly. Yeah. That is perfect, Alex.
Thank you. So maybe HP versus health regen.
What's HP?
Health points.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We're just, the more time you are not getting hit, the more better you're getting.
Sure. Yeah.
So in this case, that's exactly what it is. So what they've found is that these chemicals are not, it's not a DNA thing. Like they're built in the DNA, but you can't go down and those are never messed with.
Mm.
But that DNA, the way that I've kind of imagined it is you have many different traits. And this is why our tree here, the snow gum, is important, because it has the plasticity. It can grow whatever, however it needs, depending on those situations.
Right.
So it essentially has, let's say, 10 different categories. And when it feels and it's growing in normal situations, everything's kind of standard. Mm-hmm. It has category A, B, and C turned on. So those genes are active and it's growing A, B, and C leaf. Then if something happens to it, then the genes that basically are turned on and turned off in response would give you a different phenotype. So it would essentially say, ah, something happened, A, B, and C turn off, and it turns on D, E, and F.
And it can do that in its lifetime?
The genes aren't changing. It's just these different things that are turning on and off. Some of the genes are turning on, some of the genes are turning off. Some are activated because this stressor is, that's what it does. When this stressor comes, this gene gets activated, you know?
It's like light switches in a house.
If exactly.
Just hanging out in the living room, you've got your lamps on, but if you go to the bathroom, you turn on that bathroom light. When you leave the bathroom, you turn it off.
Yeah. Okay. And it's your body saying, okay, I need this over here, so I'm going to turn this on. Okay, I don't need it anymore. Now it's going to turn off.
This happens in humans too, by the way?
It does, yeah. Okay. And please, everyone, before you send the email, I know this is a wildly simplified version of like what's going on.
That's okay.
But the idea, which is changing the world right now, is that what is experienced by these trees, let's say this drought, it is changing its phenotypes and it's changing the chemicals in this epigenetic layer, which basically create a different on and off situation than maybe where it started. And then they have a baby, and that baby is starting with those already changed levels.
Wow.
So the baby starts to grow up and says, yeah, great, I'm already drought ready. So the tree is now passing on something that it learned, not only learned, but remembered during its lifetime.
Wow.
And then that is evolving, but it's not necessarily evolution where all the genes are changing like we talked about with those big population things.
Mm-hmm.
This is like...
like the Darwinian
theory? Yes, exactly.
Okay.
This is essentially saying there's 300 genes that are already here, and what is happening is that as a tree is experiencing certain things, it activates X amount of those 300 and then passes on that learned thing to its next generation that has those same activated genes. So potentially over time, speciation would happen when all those other genes that are just never turned on anymore kind of start dropping away. Now you have trees that cannot turn on gene A and gene B depending on the situation. They've now specialized to be in only this one particular sense.
Can you say that last part one more time? Or in a different way, rather?
Yeah. So essentially, it's like saying with a tree that has a huge amount of genetic variation, the tree of heaven types, you know, our snow gun type, they can grow almost anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This is a situation where evolution would happen where all of a sudden only these genes are turned on. Let's say it's genes 200 through 250.
Okay.
Those are the only ones that are turned on. And those are the ones that are best suited for a tree growing in a really wet, wet, wet area.
Okay. Turned on sexually.
Exactly. Quite turned on. Oh, yeah.
In a wet area.
Jeez. Yeah. Whoops. That was... Anyway, sorry, everyone. Make sure that you're putting your headphones in now.
You know, I can see the Instagram reel now.
It's actually just porn. So.
This is our OnlyFerns.
Yeah, our OnlyFerns. I love that. So basically, evolution would happen where the genes themselves start to change. So imagine that these right now, we're talking about a tree that is only turning on genes 200 through 250.
Yep.
So now over time, all the genes from 0 to 100... 0 to 150 kind of start to drop away.
Sure.
They just haven't been used in so long, or perhaps they're there, but they haven't been turned on for so long that the proteins aren't even made to like turn it on. Like it's just, they essentially become either inert or what a lot of scientists call just like filler genes, where they don't look like they're doing anything.
Interesting.
But we don't really know why they're there. And so in this case,
just unused.
They're unused. And so potentially, and I'm saying potentially because I am not a scientist doing this, and there's scientists who are always saying, you've got this entirely wrong. But what would happen in terms of the gene flow, the germ that's being passed from the parent to the offspring, would be in our Lamarckian case, there's a bunch of genes that are on or off. And then as this tree experiences something, they turn on and off, and then they pass that experience to their offspring.
Wow.
Whereas the Darwinian would say over time that certain genes go and come, and then that becomes a different species. So in our wet and wild example, imagine that over millions of years, the species that is growing only with those 200 to 250 genes turned on those numbered genes, mm-hmm. they then lose all the ones above and below, and now they are specialized. They don't have anything else they can turn on or turn off.
Sure.
They just have those particular ones that are always on, and that's what they're working with.
Yeah.
Then that would be a different species than one grown in a really dry site that has genes 0 through 10 on.
Sure.
And then speciation happens when they lose everything else, and now they cannot interbreed because their genes are so vastly different.
Okay.
These trees can still interbreed.
Wow.
There's so much plasticity. So anyway, I know this might sound confusing, but it might just because I'm so excited about it.
We are honestly like just, we are like peeking over the edge of my like retention.
Okay, cool.
You know, but we're good so far.
Nice. Cause I'm done.
Oh,
like that's it.
That is amazing, Casey.
Yeah.
So if I can recap,
please.
So you have Lamarck, Jean-Baptiste.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
As his friends call him. And he has this theory about evolution.
Yeah.
And he's like, whatever you are good at, your kids are going to be good at, and your family line. It's very like feudal sounding.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, a long line of blacksmiths, you know.
Precisely,
or like
yeah.
God-given right to be king next, right?
And that is
lineage
like,
and blood.
You're spot on. Like, that is of the era, for
yeah.
sure. And it's definitely this also, like, the Romans, they put that into order to basically say, we need blacksmith. So we're what I don't care if your dad was a blacksmith, you're now a blacksmith.
Yeah, wow.
And so there was like, it was not just this normal thing, it went from tradition to this is the state order. And now what you're saying is exactly right. It became like this bloodline, like
yeah.
exactly. Oh, you're going to be a good musician because your father, your mother was a good musician.
Right. The theory of like blood is very interesting.
Exactly. In, like, yeah.
Middle ages just, type stuff.
Yeah.
And then you have this young gun, Charles Chucky yep. Darwin,
uh-huh.
and he comes along and he's like, hey, that guy's got some interesting ideas. I want to take it a step further. I'm going to go Jane Goodall it with the turtles, the tortoises, and the finches
uh-huh.
on these islands that nobody lives on. I'm a madman. And then he comes back with this book, and he's like, wow, I think I've really nailed it.
I love this description. This is great.
So the Royal Society, or whoever the fuck, is like, yeah, you know what? This makes a lot more sense to us than Jean-Baptiste's ideas. No offense, RIP. Let's go with this. And since then, in every high school in the world,
uh-huh.
we're teaching about evolution. Well,
except in Florida.
Thank you. We're teaching about evolution from the perspective of a Charles Darwin's theory.
Yes. Very, very closed. I don't want to say closed off because it's an expansive idea, but it's very narrow. It's like this.
Sure. Yeah. That the theory is the theory.
Yeah.
And anything outside of the theory is like fake news.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It has to be proven. But now as a theory, of course, you have to basically test it. Right?
Sure.
That's the whole thing. And Darwin's theory has come out right every single time.
And so what we're learning recently
uh-huh.
is that it's not so black and white.
Yeah.
These genes can be flicked on and off, and both of them are on at the same time.
Exactly.
We're learning that Lamarck's ideas are actually kind of true as well.
Exactly.
And Darwin's ideas are
Precisely.
True.
Precisely. Precisely, Alex.
That's kind of fascinating. That's
yeah.
like, that's like, you know, I love thinking about like, what's a good, what is, who discovered that, Copernicus or, uh-huh. Who discovered that the earth was not the center of the universe?
Oh yeah. It was Galileo.
Galileo.
Maybe?
Yeah. So like him coming out with this big, like true theory
yeah.
that we know of, and being like a heretic and,
yeah.
you know, like put to the stake or whatever. And I love the idea of these like huge shifts because it makes me think like, well, what's next?
Yeah.
And this is sort of happening right now. Like this is next.
Yeah. It's the, it's this idea that like, yeah, things do change. Like it's like these two things have weaved together.
Yeah.
And
they're just different yeah. pieces of the same pie, really.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's fascinating because essentially it's like, I would think of this as Darwin's idea is grainy. It's 64-bit. And then
wow.
as soon as you like up the bits and you can actually like get a clear image, you're like, oh, now I can see between the pixels.
Wow.
And now I get it. Now there's all these other little mechanisms that mm-hmm. are working in between that have an effect on the way this goes. And it's yeah. just, it's amazing.
Putting that puzzle. Hey, the dog's got a fish in its mouth.
What? No idea what that means.
You put that puzzle piece, you know, and the dog's head. Hey, the dog's got a fish in its mouth.
You just never knew because you haven't quite got the puzzle done enough?
Okay, I thought it was a dog. Now it has a little character.
Well, hey, pixelation always ruins everything, doesn't it?
All right. Hey, that was our discussion on the snow gum. A great one, Case. I'm feeling pretty jazzed about that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. And please, everyone, if you just look up, like, epigenetics, you'll find this information. And it's just, I think it helps Alex personally dispel the myth about the blood that you're talking about, because that's still here today, very much so.
Oh yeah.
Especially with the color of someone's skin or where they're from.
Yes.
So I think that if we are able to actually say, well, there's a lot more about where and that kind of socioeconomic stuff that comes into it. Mm. Now epigenetic research and studies are basically saying, yeah, it's not like anything about this. There's a lot more that has to say, no, if these things happen, it's literally scientifically shown that it has a negative effect overall, or a positive effect, or just an effect. So I just think it's a fascinating new world.
I agree with you, Case. Mm. Casey, that was our discussion of the snow gum. Hey, we hope you enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. We got to give a review to this tree. Oh boy, I'm excited.
This is gonna be interesting.
I'm feeling a good one here, Case.
Okay.
But we got to do so after a quick break. We will be right back with Completely Arbitrary.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the snow gum. Casey, it's time to give our review for the snow gum. Mm-hmm. And here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this beautiful tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident expert, we'll begin with you.
Yes, sir. All right. So I really do like this tree. I think it's a beautiful tree, and I really want to see the flowers because I don't think that I've seen the flowers of it anywhere in Oregon, and I'm sure that it's going to do it. I just have now learned that I need to look for it.
Totally.
So I think that as a large tree, like it growing to 100 feet as a small to medium tree, I'm like, God, you guys, check your forest privilege a little bit, okay? People on the East Coast are just fawning over that.
Everything is just crazy in Australia.
It is. I just love it. It's great. So I think the flowers are really beautiful. Mm. I do love everything about the normal stuff about eucalyptus. It's got great bark. They grow really beautiful. Like I said, the flowers, their leaves are these gorgeous long things. I dig the thing. So they always get, like, you know, a baseline 6.0 for being a eucalyptus that grows like a tree.
All right.
You know, like, I'm going to start there.
Okay.
But moving up to the idea that this is a tree that, I just like a tree that is really good to study, you know? Even the black cottonwood famously is like the first tree to have its entire genome sequenced. So it's one of the most studied trees in the entire world. And we didn't even talk about that when we even covered that tree.
Yeah, ironic.
The fact that it's a tree that has this giant plasticity in its genome to basically be able to grow in almost any situation and compete and do very well. And then we can also, like, notice and say, ah, look at that. Oh my gosh, you can see all these differences, but it's the same tree. I kind of like it. I kind of like a tree with many different faces.
Mm.
It just does whatever it needs to do in that moment.
Sure.
I just think that's fascinating. My heart says 7.7.
Oh, it's great.
7.7 golden cones of honor for the eucalyptus Passiflora.
I think that's a great score.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy that you agree with me, Alex. I think it's a cool tree.
The snow gum, like I said, there's no gum like snow gum. I stand by that.
Yep.
I think genetic plasticity is a really cool phrase and concept. I love that it kind of meets the challenge wherever it is, you know? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. like, it's just as...
It tells its babies.
And yeah, that too. And it is like this exact same tree as the one that grows up in the snow on the mountain,
yeah,
15 miles that way. Uh-huh. But they live in completely different conditions and have adapted to, you know, to do that. And I think that's really neat. I also love that it's kind of like a part of this big revelatory research thing. I like the flowers. I like the flowers more before they bloom, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the flowers when they're like in both states, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Bark, mm-hmm. Perfect. 10 out of 10 bark. It's one of my favorite types of bark.
Yeah, that's very fair.
It reminds me of the rainbow eucalyptus.
Yeah, so beautiful.
Although that is like an angel from heaven.
Yeah, you faint whenever you see it.
Mm-hmm. It's a problem.
You okay, Alex?
I've talked to doctors about it.
I have talked to doctors.
I am going to give the snow gum an 8.2 golden cones 8. Of honor.
8.2.
That feels right to me.
Incredible.
No, 8.25. 8.25.
8.25. It's going up.
Yep.
Jeez.
That's right.
Well done.
Thank you.
I think that's very fair. It's got it all, and it looks great, and you can plant it up here in Norway.
You know what? It's got it.
It does. It sure does, Alex. All right. Fair. Good.
Casey, that mm-hmm. was our review of the snow gum. It is, of course, time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. And hey, if you've got a question for the podcast and you want the chance to have it read on the show and answered by Casey and I, support the podcast at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Click on the AMA button and ask away. Casey.
Yes, Alex. What do we got today here?
Today's question is from Christina. Hey, Casey and Alex. First, wow, I love this podcast. Thanks, Christina. Related, I love this podcast for many reasons, but largely because you all make science accessible to a broader population. I am a researcher who struggles with making my work accessible to non-researchers, and oftentimes I work with a designer to help me make my results and findings more consumable.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Could you share any thoughts, tips, or tricks you have on this topic, or just on the topic of the value of multidisciplinary collaboration?
Ooh.
I feel like your musician and science person combo is so useful and perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina with a K.
Christina with a K. Thanks, Christina.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's very similar to the one we responded to just a little while ago.
Yeah, we've talked about this a bit, but we like talking about it.
Exactly. And I think this one's a little different because I think it hits on, like, you being a musician, me being a science-oriented person, what's the side of the brains that does those things?
Right. So the left side
uh-huh.
of the brain is uh-huh. responsible for logic
okay.
and deduction and making connections.
Decisions, maybe?
Decisions, okay, yeah, potentially, yeah.
All right.
Right side is considered like the creative side of the brain. So, you know, metaphors and creativity and color and all that stuff.
I see, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I think that, especially the very end there, that just makes sense to me because if you can cross those two streams, then it's more palatable. But I think also between you and I, you do a good job just even in this episode being like, okay, kind of like this. And then even if it's wrong, then I can say no, but it kind of, and then we can kind of, you know, figure it out.
Sure.
Where it's just that difference in perspective, and a difference in perspective, in my opinion, is what helps get things across.
When learning something, a metaphor or an analogy really helps me.
Yes.
Because later when I try to recall that thing, I will think of that analogy and be like, oh, that's right. It's kind of like this.
Yes. It's like, oh, I understand this. And if this works sort of like that, or like exactly the opposite, mm-hmm. you know, something that can be very clear.
Totally.
It usually helps me as well.
Yeah. So how do we do it, Casey?
How do we do it? I don't know.
So
masterful, Alex, is the proper term.
Oh, excuse me.
So
indulgent.
How do we do it? So I think, for me at least, what I do is I just talked, it was on a podcast, which I don't know when it's going to come out or these little things, but
oh, right.
It's essentially talking to kids about science things about trees. And they ask very simple questions, and it's nice to give simple answers. But I also don't think kids are stupid by any means. In fact, it's a thing that I don't know, some people would call it a flaw. I think I'm just doing it the way it should be done. I just talk to kids the way I talk to almost everyone else.
It's true. I've seen you interact with kids. You're great.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you.
You don't talk down and you don't like put on a different voice. You are Casey.
But the point is, not to insult anyone, but I think the best way to talk to adults is to talk to them like you're talking to a kid. The irony being the best way to talk to kids is the best way to talk to adults.
Talk to everybody exactly the same. ELI5.
What?
Or EIL. Explain it like I'm five. ELI5.
Yeah, there you go.
That is a great... Have you seen these videos, Casey, of... it's like a... It'll take like somebody who is a master at something.
Uh-huh.
Maybe like a world-renowned physicist.
Mm-hmm.
And they will explain the same concept chronologically to a 5-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 25-year-old, a 40-year-old, and then another like master
insane
at that thing.
Scientist.
Yeah.
No, that's brilliant.
And they essentially, I mean, like besides some more like added detail, they're like so good at it because they just like say the same thing.
You're just using bigger, more technical words,
yes,
maybe?
Yes, essentially, yeah.
Which means something slightly more detailed, or more specific.
But the way they describe, I guess the reason I'm saying this is because the way they describe it to the 5 or the 13-year-old mm-hmm. is like perfect. Like that, you should describe it to everybody that way.
Yeah, exactly.
At least like the people who aren't, you don't have like master's degrees in these things.
Yeah. You know? And I also, like, you know me, I very much believe that language is very important, that how you say and what you say really has a big effect on mm-hmm. things. And I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg in that realm. But if I was to explain, you know, any of the stuff that we talked about today, for instance, I could read you the studies. I don't understand the studies half the time.
Right.
And it's way easier for me to conceptualize it by just saying, let me just dumb it down to this point where, in fact, I actually try not to use that term, but it's the simplest one.
Yeah.
But I try to rephrase things in a way that's like, well, just imagine it like this, and just coming up with something so abstract that it doesn't even matter. Well, because sometimes the abstraction separates it from your brain's like connections to other things.
Oh, wow.
So if I say, Alex, imagine we have cup A, B, and C, and then we describe what's going on in each of those things, mm-hmm. then that will take you away than if I give you some other metaphor that could have some other connotation, where I'm like, well, imagine it's gene A, B, and C. Then you're thinking, okay, well, how exactly do genes work and what do they do?
Totally.
And if I just say, well, it's a cup filled with A.
Immediately, like, I can see that cup.
Exactly. But also you don't go any deeper into it. You know,
whenever I will say, that's interesting, Casey, when you do sort of like you have A, B, and C and D of this thing, and then P and M of this thing, and then suddenly I have such a hard time keeping track, because I'm like, wait, the number, like the letters throw me off, and I'm like, I can't keep them all in my mind. But if you make them like characters from a movie.
Yes. Well, see, Alex, this is where I think you come in best.
Yeah.
Because that is how your brain works. And then you bring that up. You did it today where you said, oh, it's kind of like a health versus armor. Mm. And it's the same idea. It's describing everything. It's just using different terms and different experiences to kind of help show that.
Sure.
And that creates a different perspective, that you're just looking at the same thing. It's just a new, different way to see it.
Interesting.
And that, I think, is the key, perhaps.
Yeah. I'd like to say a word about humor.
Please.
I think like a part of my role in the show is to be a silly goose. But if we were like, you know, trying to, if we were like in a classroom
uh-huh.
in front of a bunch of like 17-year-olds,
uh-huh.
I would not try to be funny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like that don't you remember when you were in high school and like they would show a video that was like trying to be funny.
Yeah.
It was like so lame, and it just like pushed you away from the concept.
Yeah.
And so out of touch. Like, I think it helps that I can't see our listeners. So it's me mm-hmm. trying to make mm-hmm. you laugh, essentially.
Yeah. 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 Which I do.
But I think a touch of humor, tasteful humor.
Or, you know, the taste can come and go.
Wow. Can go a long way to help drive a point home.
Yeah.
And like lighten the mood. Cause a lot of these things are like really heavy. And like, I bounce off of some of these subjects, like a quarter on a piece of wood. I'm just like, I don't want to talk about that. But if I can goof around about it, and if you goof back, suddenly I'm like more interested and more like, you know, willing to talk.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Thank you, Christina with a K.
Great question. Sorry for that long answer, everyone.
I think it was perfectly fine.
Thanks, Alex.
I enjoy talking about that stuff. And as I said, if you've got a question for the pod, join up on Completely Arbitrary Treemium. Become a Treemium member. Support this podcast and get cool things in return. Arbitrarypod.supercast.com. And hey, one of the things you get from being a member is 20% off our merch store at all times.
That's right.
So, That's something I forget about sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I think that's what we got to do. Just pepper in these little perks every now and then. Like, hey, just remember, you'll get this.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Case.
Good work. Thanks for listening on this complicated subject and watching me be so giddy about it.
Well, your enthusiasm was contagious. Yes. I also was getting into it. I never thought I would about that particular thing.
You know, epigenetics just really don't do it for me. But you know what? It turns out it does.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. Hey, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
See you later.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals. If you want to support this podcast and become a Treemium member, head over to arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Thanks for listening.